The boys did not respond. "The threat didn't scare us," Rebesha later recounted. "We were worried more about our parents' sorrow." When they saw that the boys stood their ground, they moved all of them to a room with Ramesha. After the interrogators left, there was silence in the room. "We didn't know what to say or how to speak with Ramesha," Rebesha later recounted. "We wanted him to be the first one to speak." Ramesha sensed what was in the hearts of his students, and he lifted his hands in a calming motion. "You should know," he said, "the interrogators did not torture or pressure me, nor did they break me. I admitted it all on my own initiative. As I sat last night alone in my cell, I thought a lot about the situation. I feared that if I continued the denials, the interrogators would go after you and they would apply severe pressure upon you. I also feared the denial on my part would intensify the investigation all around and they would succeed in discovering and revealing additional people connected to the yeshiva. And then the results will be grave for all of Temche Tmimim. Therefore, I decided to take everything upon myself. I am the one who found you in the street. I am the one who brought you into the synagogue. I am the one who taught you Torah. And I am the one who was concerned all the time for your nourishment. In their eyes, all blame lies only on me. Therefore, you can admit that I taught you, but remain steadfast that you are orphans and that you do not know anything about where I received funds and who were the supporters of the yeshiva. Let me reassure you that there is no need to worry. All the names I supplied are people who have already passed away." Ramesha continued in a whisper. "You are young, and the authorities will not impose on you harsh punishments. I am sure that soon they will release you and you will continue to learn Torah. As for me, do not worry. Hashem will surely help." Ramesha's esteem rose in the eyes of his students. They saw with their own eyes a living example of unmistakable Mesiras Nefesh. This act infused the students with strength and courage for whatever the future had in store for them. When the boys were called afterwards to a new interrogation, they admitted that they did indeed learn Torah with the uncle. The interrogator smiled in satisfaction. Ramesha, Reberel, and the other older boys were taken to a separate cell and later sentenced for their sins to several years of imprisonment. They went through many hardships. The younger ones were returned to their cell and once again left alone. For 3 weeks, the boys remained strong with tremendous Jewish bravery. They spent all that time in a damp basement and suffered from acute hunger. They did not eat the cooked prison food and thereby were left with just a little bit of dry bread to eat. The guards told them to eat, otherwise their rations would be reduced. And indeed, before long, they began to feel the taste of hunger. In the morning, the guards distributed pieces of bread, which were barely enough for a meal. In the afternoon, they gave out soup, which they didn't eat because it was treif. Thus, they remained hungry. It's really hard to describe the intense hunger that they felt there. Later, another problem arose, a shortage of water. In the cell, it was very hot during the daytime, and this greatly increased their thirst. The water distributed was barely enough to quench their thirst. However, as Chassidische boys, they needed much more water for Negelwasser. Seeing how they wasted precious water on washing their hands, the other prisoners decided that it could not continue like this. They set a quota of water for each of them. It was very difficult to cope with this limited quota, and as they did not compromise even one iota of halacha, they had to use the Negelwasser of Shachris also for washing for their meal. When they woke up in the morning, they washed their hands, said Alon Tehillah Seidayim and Birchas HaTorah, and immediately said Hamaitzi on the bread. Only afterwards would they daven. Otherwise, they wouldn't have any water to wash before eating their bread. This was their only meal throughout the day. The rest of the time, they were simply hungry and thirsty. The boys passed the long winter nights in their damp cell amid hunger. After close to a month of being imprisoned under these very difficult conditions, it was decided to move them to another location. On a Friday morning, the guards began calling out the names of the boys. Those who were called were commanded to take their belongings and go out of their cell. After everyone left the cell, the boys were put into a vehicle and commanded to lower their heads so that they would not be seen by the residents of the city. Apparently, even these evildoers were ashamed to be seen transporting such young boys to prison and treating them like prisoners. The boys were brought to a government boarding school for orphans. It was in a grand place surrounded by lush greenery. The boys quickly noticed that the structures had once belonged to Jews. You could see markings where mezuzahs once hung. They also saw a sukkah with schach still on it. The children who were educated in the institution were either orphans or had one parent imprisoned and the other unable to care for them. Many were Jewish, and so was the principal. During Stalin's times, similar institutions cropped up across Russia in order that the children of political and religious prisoners should be brainwashed with the communist ideology. The boys entered the large dining room where there were long tables laden with food and drink. The principal addressed them. "Welcome. Now you are not under the authority of the NKVD. You are free boys. However, you have to maintain the code of conduct of this place. No leaving the premises without permission. You have to remove your hat. You have to eat everything served, etc." When he ended his pleasant speech, the boys, understandably, did not remove their hats. It was now Friday afternoon. The boys showered in honor of Shabbos and removed the filth which had accumulated on them during the weeks they were imprisoned. They received new undergarments to change into and felt better. Friday night, they welcomed the Shabbos, davened together, and after that, happily approached the dining room. Their eyes lit up. There was so much bread. They cleared away all the other tray food and piled bread in front of themselves. The children from the nearby tables offered them bread, having pity on the starving unfortunates who had just arrived. After Kiddush, they pounced on the bread. Some of them ate too much and later that night suffered from severe stomach pains. Their stomachs had shrunk in prison and could not digest that much bread. The boys' behavior on Shabbos did not please the principal. Time and again, he called them and informed them that they had to remove their hats and eat everything. They, understandably, refused. The management soon decided that they were not suitable for their institution. A police officer appeared before them and notified them that they were being transferred to another institution. The boys were annoyed about it and argued that there was no reason to send them to another institution as they had parents and they wanted to return home. However, the officer ruled, "You cannot be trusted. You will once again gather somewhere and begin to learn illegally. You must go through a new education system." After meeting with the officer, they were put on a vehicle and again departed to the unknown. They drove about 10 kilometers outside the city until they arrived at a fairly nice place within a forest in the suburbs of Berdichev. It was Matzah Shabbos, and the moon was clearly visible. The boys reminded each other about Kiddush Levana, and they took the opportunity of being outdoors to say Kiddush Levana. This place was also a government boarding school for orphans. However, this one was for children who were either orphaned from both parents or both parents were in prison. This institution was run by the NKVD. The principal stood before them, this time a non-Jew, who once again issued the same speech as the principal of the previous institution. It was forbidden to leave the premises, they were obligated to follow the rules, they had to eat all that they were served, and they had to remove their hats. "If you will behave properly, eat all your food, actively participate in the lessons, follow the rules, and you will cease all your old fanatical practices, you will receive many benefits. However, if you dare to continue to behave in anti-Soviet ways, the authorities of the institution will make it worse for you and impose on you punishments, and if necessary, transfer you to a harsher and more severe institution. Nevertheless, all these threats did not affect the boys. Their experiences from their days in yeshiva and Berdichev taught them how to operate underground. They tried to maintain the routine of the institution without standing out and continued to fulfill Torah and mitzvahs secretly. They did not touch the cooked foods using various pretexts. The pieces of meat they would put discreetly in their pockets. Every now and then, they would congregate secretly and discuss the possibility of escape. The most difficult thing for them during those times was being aware of the anguish their parents must be going through. Understandably, news of their arrest became known to their parents, who eventually also found out where they were being held. A number of parents fled their homes, assuming that soon they will be also arrested for having their children sent to learn Torah. When they saw that no one was chasing them, eventually they dared to return home. One of the regulations of the school allowed the children to take daily one-hour outings beyond the walls of the institution. However, the group of six boys did not go out simultaneously. They were only allowed to go out two at a time. The rest of the group remained in the institution as a guarantee for their return. Only after the first pair returned did the second one go out, and so on. When they initially arrived at the institution, the boys had requested permission to go into the city, to the shul where they had learned, to get clean clothes, which they had there, and additional items which were urgently needed. The administration of the institution permitted only two boys to go and bring the necessary items for all six of them. The pair used this opportunity to bring back a pair of tefillin. They buried them in the snow, which blanketed the forest surrounding the orphanage. The tefillin were small, but high-quality ones. The boys asked the principal for permission to ice skate in order to stretch their muscles and do a little sports. As mentioned, this was in the midst of the winter, and there were huge frozen puddles in the area. They received permission, equipped themselves with skating gear, and went out. From then on, the outings were acts of Mesiras Nefesh. Daily, each group that went out hurried into the forest and put on the tefillin one after the other. It was the month of Shvat. The winter was harsh, and it was bitter cold in the forest. However, they would happily remove their coats, roll up their sleeve, put on the tefillin, and daven. All this within the time allotted for them to be away. It's impossible to describe the feeling of happiness and joy which they felt during those moments. After not being able to fulfill this mitzvah for more than a month, putting on the precious tefillin was exhilarating. They cried and embraced the tefillin, and with great difficulty, removed them in order that their friends could put on the tefillin as well.